You're listening to Clinical Conversations, a Journal Watch podcast. It's for the week ending January 8th, 2010, and it's podcast number 70. As always, previous podcasts and links are available at podcasts.jwatch.org. I'm Joe Elia. This week, we're going to check in with the USPSTF controversy on breast cancer screening. Our guests are the authors of a helpful essay on the topic in JAMA. First, this review of recent important clinical news stories. Probably of most practical importance this week was the release of the adult immunization schedule in MMWR. I know that there will be lots of downloads of this chart and that they will be posted on a wall near you. The URL to that chart is on the website, podcasts.jwatch.org. Look for the news links underneath the introduction. Next, there's a paper in Lancet showing an advantage of the platelet inhibitor ticagrelor over clopidogrel in patients undergoing invasive procedures for acute coronary syndromes. By the one-year mark, complications were significantly lower in the ticagrelor recipients. A commentary in Lancet calls ticagrelor, quoting, a new standard of care. And then there's this story from JAMA showing that injections of platelet-rich plasma don't add to the benefits of physical therapy in tendinitis. By the six-month mark, patients in groups taking the injections and doing exercise did no better than patients doing only the exercises. And finally, despite enthusiasm for starting rapid response teams, the data showing their worth just isn't in yet, according to a meta-analysis in the Archives of Internal Medicine. The meta-analysts examined nearly a score of studies comprising over a million admissions. They found that although rapid response teams lowered the rates of cardiopulmonary arrest outside ICUs, hospital mortality was unaffected. That's the major news. Let's go on to the interview. You're listening to Clinical Conversations. Earlier this week, JAMA published four brief essays on the controversy surrounding the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force recommendation against routine breast screening in women in their 40s. One of these essays seems especially noteworthy. In it, the authors clearly portray the problem and consequences of overdiagnosis of breast cancer. They advocate for informed discussions between patients and physicians, and they criticize the politicization of medical care. We've got the authors of this essay as our guests this week. Dr. Stephen Woolosian is a general internist and a professor of medicine and of community and family medicine at Dartmouth Medical School. Dr. Lisa Schwartz is also an internist and professor of medicine and of community and family medicine at Dartmouth. Welcome to you both.
Thank you for having us.
Dr. Woolosian, we talked back in 2008 about an article you'd done on communicating more clearly with patients about their behavioral risks. Your JAMA essay seems to be in the same vein, only this time the risks are from medical treatments. I thought it was kind of ironic that in the first case it was people's personal health habits, and in the second instance it was the dangers of walking into a treatment.
The same issues, I think, apply to thinking about behavioral risk factors or risks such as having contact with the healthcare system. There are benefits and harms, the pros and cons, and people need to weigh these things because, these are real trade-offs. And so with the case of mammography, we're not arguing that mammography, is no good, it doesn't have any benefit. There appears to be some benefit for some groups of women, but we just think it's really important for people to have the facts so that they can make an informed decision, because there are real trade-offs. There are real harms, false positives, anxiety, and the most important harm is overdiagnosis.
You have in your essay a table of risks at various ages with and without screening. Do you think it would be helpful for physicians who advise women in their 40s, Dr. Schwartz, to keep this at their desk?
I do. I mean, I think that it's very hard to have these kinds of discussions to begin with, but unless doctors have ready access to this kind of information, it's very hard to talk to a patient about it, because I think most of us have no idea how big the risk of anything is. And we hear about breast cancer all the time, and, you know, because the more people that we screen, the more people that we know who are diagnosed. So I think that we all have sort of an elevated sense of the chance of getting breast cancer, but seeing the population statistics to know, you know, at my age, what's the chance that I'm going to die from breast cancer in the next 10 years, and how much will screening lower that chance, that sort of grounds you to understand how big the benefit is. And then once you understand that, then you can weigh that against the harms. But I think it's only by seeing that information in a way that both patients and doctors can understand together that it makes it possible to have that discussion.
One of the other authors on this series of essays was a radiologist who does breast imaging, and she said that she went beyond the USPSTF recommendation for biennial screening above 50. She said, let's roll it back to 40 and let's do it annually, but let's do it only to women who understand those risks and are willing to accept them. So it seemed surprising advice. But then when you think about it, I think you'd probably agree that if women are willing to accept those consequences, why deny them the peace of mind?
I mean, and I think the task force was really saying that because it's a close call, that women in their 40s should make an informed decision. I don't think that they were saying that women in their 40s should not have it. You know, technically, I guess that's a D recommendation, which would say they say don't do it. But mm-hmm. what they were trying to say, I think, was that women in their 40s should make their own decision. And I would say that that's probably true for women in their 50s, too, because, you know, it's not just the benefit, that it has this very real implication in terms of overdiagnosis, that people deserve to be involved in that decision. And that for so long, I mean, that's part of how we got here, which is that for so long, we've only told people about the benefit. We've only said, you know, you're to blame, you know, take the test. Don't take the chance, you know, mm-hmm. that screening, that you're somehow irresponsible if you don't get screened. And so I think that, you know, when we change the message, because we recognize now that over time that the harms are real and that there are women who have breast cancer, you know, under the microscope, but that breast cancer was never going to bother them and they're being treated unnecessarily and mm-hmm. those people can only be harmed. And I think it's only fair to women, regardless of what age they are, for them to understand both the benefit and the harm. And, of course, it's important for them to have perspective, which is that, you know, we don't have a lot of screening tests that are proven to lower the chance of dying. So that is important to realize that this is a test, at least, that, you know, we're pretty confident has a benefit. It may not be tremendous, but it has a mortality benefit, and that's important. But that the chance of that benefit comes with a important price, which is the chance of overdiagnosis.
Have your other physicians reacted to your essay, and have you been hearing from them?
Well, I think there's some selection bias. We've heard from a number of physicians, but mostly, and very positive, but mostly these are people who are, you know, preaching to the choir.
Uh-huh.
We haven't heard any, we haven't gotten any negative response yet.
I mean, I think it's hard to know because I think that this issue, you know, the large emotional response to this issue was, you know, probably, you know, when the task force came out and those couple of weeks afterwards. So it's hard to know.
Physicians.
How much more, you know, strong emotion there is on this issue.
Yeah, there's probably quite a bit still out there.
Yeah.
Physicians First Watch summarized those essays, and we included with the summary a survey, and we had over 500 responses, and we asked people, and of course, you know, it's all in how you ask the question, but we asked people if they were going to continue to recommend screening to women in their 40s despite the USPSTF the recommendations. And 2-1, they said that they were going to continue making the recommendation for screening.
Well, I don't think that's very surprising, because there are all sorts of forces, you know, that would push doctors to continue screening at the younger age. It's a sometimes used as a performance measure. So, you know, so if their patients aren't getting screened, then the doctor is rated as not as good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a sort of cultural bias. For years, we've all been told, you know, don't take the chance, take the test.
Yeah.
So, that's a countercultural message. It involves a difficult and time-consuming discussion with patients to make sure that they understand what the trade-offs are and why maybe they wouldn't want to. I think some doctors are afraid that if they suggest less screening, the patient may say, oh, I want a different doctor. That's actually something we found in a survey that we did a number of years ago. So I think there's a lot of forces that are...
Right, and also there's the, you know, certainly the malpractice fear that everybody has, which is the fear of a missed cancer. And so, you know, there is no malpractice penalty for overdiagnosis. It's always the failure to diagnose. And so, I mean, I think our legal system also...
I think a better question, if you were to redo your survey, might be to ask the doctors, the women doctors, whether, you know, if this information is changing their own personal practice to try to eliminate some of those, you know, potential biases.
Mm-hmm. Certainly the politics, you know, there are all these other factors, and then politics got injected into it.
Yes.
And that's been very interesting to see.
Well, that's happened before. 10 years ago, when you know we saw almost identical debate when you know NCI came out with recommendations about you know women making their own decision as opposed to routinely screening women. There was a unanimous Senate vote condemning the recommendation and advocating for screening. So we see the same thing. I mean, there were two, I know of two congressional actions since this came out. Senator Mikulski and Wasserman Schultz, their votes, non-binding votes, but votes expressing the sense that, you know, the task force recommendations shouldn't be construed to have any impact on coverage issues or... In fact, in Wasserman Schultz's bill, they're calling for even more screening for other things where there's less data, you know, like ovarian cancer screening where there's even
less
data.
That's in the Mikulski bill.
Mikulski bill. So you know, the politicians weigh in, but you know, we think that the most important thing is for the individuals who stand to benefit or be harmed by screening have the facts, access to the facts in a way that they can understand. So they can make a decision, not because you know it's because of some political benefit, but because of their own personal benefit.
So, what would you have clinicians do next week that they might not have been doing last week?
The issue is how it can be done under the constraints of you know short visits. But I think the ideal thing would be for patients to see tables like the one that we produced in JAMA, tables that they can discuss with their doctors so they can understand what the potential benefits and harms are for them, and then they can decide. I think that providing tables like this for decisions like mammography or for other decisions, you know, would be really helpful.
And I think even if the doctor still says, you know, to me, I think that, you know, the benefit outweighs it, and they involve women so that they can have informed consent to realize that there are real harms, I think that is an important step forward. Even, you know, the doctor may still decide to recommend it, but the question is whether, because screening has, you know, both positive and negative effects, about letting women be part of that decision.
I guess it often does come down to that, doesn't it, that discussing anything with patients is better than just making a decision and forging ahead.
Because the patient's the one who lives with this, the consequence of what happens, and so they're living with the consequence of overdiagnosis, and it's, you know, I mean, of course nobody wants to die unnecessarily, but also people don't want to, you know, lose their breath or, you know, have their body image changed or, you know, have the ongoing, you know, fear of cancer that happens after unnecessary diagnosis. So both things have real impact on people's lives, and women deserve to know that.
Mm-hmm.
But one problem, though, is that with more information, things become less simple. So it's a very simple message to say, oh, get screened. It's a much more complicated message to give people the benefits and the harms, because then you see, well, a screening doesn't guarantee I won't die from cancer. It may increase the chance of harm and so on. I wish there were a way to make these things simple, but right now with the state of our technology, there are these real trade-offs. And women have to know it, because otherwise they're going to make decisions that they may regret.
Yeah, well, I guess no one ever went into medicine because they thought it was going to be simple, so.
Right, but I mean, I think that people have thought for a long time that screening was the one thing we could all feel really good about.
Right, right.
You know, it was the way to show that we cared and that, you know, earlier is better and that whole thing. And so I think, you know, it's, you know, and everybody wants to be able to do something to take control of what they're going to die from. And I think that both recognizing the limits, that while it does have a benefit on reducing the chance of dying from breast cancer, it's not as big as we'd all hope it is, mm-hmm. and that it, you know, comes with
but also
these important downsides.
The risk isn't maybe as big as people often think it is, which I think is very important, because all this focus on screening, I think one of the sort of side effects is that maybe people start thinking that the chance of dying from breast cancer or other things is much greater than it may actually be.
Yeah.
And so by getting these numbers, people get some context and some grounding for deciding just how big their risk is.
Well, I will put a link to that essay on the website so that people can get back to it if they haven't already seen it. And I wanted to thank you, Dr. Willosh and Dr. Schwartz, for your time with me today.
Well, sure. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You can reach Clinical Conversations at 1-617-440-4374, or you can write to me, jelia@jwatch.org. All earlier podcasts are available at podcasts.jwatch.org, where links for all news stories can also be found. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Adoriano. I'm Joe Elia. Join us next time, and thank you for listening.